Welcome into another edition of What Barry's Talking About from Barry 360. I'm Dan Blakely. On this week's program, we chat with Ontario NDP leader Marit Stiles about health care, Ontario Place, and keeping a majority government in check. Singer-songwriter Amanda Marshall returns to the spotlight 20 years after turning it off. And we meet a Barry teen who suffered what seemed like an innocent skateboarding injury that has turned into a fight for his life. But first, bad enough when we as adults get a migraine headache, we at least know what it is and what we're dealing with, but with kids it's different. Not knowing what it is, not knowing what to do about it, and having to deal with people who don't understand what they're going through. Enter Joanne McPhail of Barrie, who has experienced all of the above. She's written a book she calls Millie Has a Migraine, which she tells Barrie 360's MJ she hopes will help.
I think to provide a little bit of comfort for children who are struggling with migraine or potentially other issues which cause them to sort of miss out, experience pain, miss out, maybe be misunderstood, and so they don't feel so alone. And also maybe to help friends and family, teachers, coaches understand what it's like to suffer from migraines.
And I think there's still a misconception about migraines. They think, you know, it's just a headache or it's more of an adult problem, but a lot of children suffer from this as well. Is it hereditary or how does it work?
Yeah, so I'm not a doctor. I know there is a hereditary element. There certainly was for me and my children. And I understand that it can be hereditary for sure. And it is something that can sometimes be trivialized by people who know a migraine sufferer. Many people assume migraine is just a headache, sort of in quotes, and when in reality it can be quite debilitating and a whole body experience. And so the book was written to sort of just maybe educate people a little bit about what it's like to feel or what you feel like when you have a migraine and how you feel both physically and mentally, because it can also be pretty socially ostracizing.
And this has a personal element to you, correct?
It does, yeah. And so I originally got migraines at around age 24, which was a terrible thing to have to go through at that age. But when I had both my children, unfortunately, they did seem to inherit the migraine gene and experienced migraines fairly early in life. And so we had some difficult times just trying to figure out how to help. It's hard as a parent to watch a child suffer physically and emotionally, and where to find the resources to help try to solve the problem. So this book was written many years after we'd sort of gone through that time period. My children are young adults now, and it was, I don't know, a bit of a therapeutic adventure for me to write it and put it together and put it out into the world, and hopefully it helps some people.
Okay, and without giving too much away, can you tell me a little bit about how the story flows? Like, tell us a little bit about Millie.
Yeah, so she's a child, I would say probably age six or so in my brain. She's a fictional child. And really it's just a day in the life of Millie as she wakes up in the morning and has a terrible migraine, and how she interacts with her family. And she's got a dog that gives her some comfort, and that was sort of stemming, I guess, a little bit from our experience. We had a family pet, and boy, that can be comforting to kids who are spending a day alone, sort of not feeling well. And it has her kind of going through the process of, like, struggling to try to get up and just brush her teeth and get dressed and really making the effort to make it into school. And then her mom has to call the school and let them know that she can't attend and she's missing the track and field meet that day. So just instilling some kind of practical realities of what happens when a child experiences that. And then talking a little just about how she feels like she's disappointing her friends and her school, and she struggles with stress because of her migraines. And just sort of takes her through that day of what it feels like to be at home alone and missing out on whatever's happening during the day. That could be band practice or sports or just attending school, etc. Talks a little bit about when you have a migraine, often, or when you suffer from migraines, you often have to cancel out on things last minute. And so just trying to explain to people and friends of people with migraines that The migraine sufferer isn't canceling unless they absolutely have to, and it's nothing personal, and please understand. So just trying to educate people about those feelings associated with migraine.
Where can people get this book?
So the book is available on Amazon. Literally, if you just plug in Millie has a migraine on Amazon, you can find it.
Thank you so much for your time today. I really appreciate it.
I appreciate it as well. Thanks so much.
She's been a New Democrat MPP in Toronto since 2018 and became leader of the party in February. We're joined by Marit Stiles. Welcome to our podcast.
I'm very happy to be here.
Lots for us to talk about. Let's begin with the last 3 months as leader of the party. How's that going?
Oh, well, it's been great, I have to say. I feel like we've come out really strong in the legislature, and I'm quite happy to be able to take on Doug Ford and the Conservatives. And to speak for Ontarians, you know. And the best part of this, which I've always knew was going to be the part I loved the most, is getting out around the province. I love Ontario. I love every corner of this province. And so the opportunity to get around the province more and connect with people and learn so much has been fantastic.
We all go into a new adventure with an idea of what we're getting into. What, if anything, has happened that you weren't expecting that maybe has taken you by surprise?
I'm pretty experienced in a lot of respects when it comes to, you know, political life and stuff. But, I have to say, I think it doesn't really surprise me, but it always strikes me how much what people are willing to share about their lives, about their experiences. And it's really important because for us as politicians, you know, we really need to be able, if you're going to be a good elected representative, you really need to listen to people. I mean, that is the number one role. And so people sharing their stories, it makes it easier for us to push back and to know what people's priorities are.
They're not talking to you. You can't help them much, can you?
No, that's true.
How difficult has it been being the only opposition, really, to the majority Conservative government?
Yeah, well, for sure, the weight is on our shoulders. There's no question. We have a huge responsibility, and I take it really seriously. I mean, I think the role of the leader of the official opposition is super important and serious, and it's a real privilege, actually. But it does mean, you know, we have to push back really hard because I'm very concerned about what this government and Premier Ford have envisioned for this province. I'm really concerned about how it's going to hurt people. And so, you know, I really feel like we have to bring all our energy and everything we have to the legislature and to everything we do every day.
And therein lies the difficulty. The Conservatives were voted in with a majority. They can pretty much do anything they want. I've had people note that the brain trust of corporations can be held accountable for their decisions, and they wonder how the government can also be held accountable. Is an election the only answer to that? What tools might you have in your toolbox that you can fight back with?
Well, for sure. You know, and it's actually, I would say, in the last couple of decades, both Liberal and Conservative governments have really watered down a lot of the tools that opposition has to be able to push back. But we do every day. And I think with this government, what we've learned is that when we can build connections with other, you know, with unions, with other movements, and get the people of this province standing up and speaking out, that's when we succeed. And we're really good at that. So if you look at how the unions all came together to back the education workers against the government in the fall, that worked because people were behind them, because parents and students and community members were with them. And we were too. So we were on the front lines at Queen's Park pushing back super hard, and together we managed to push them back on their heels. And they backed off. But that is what we have to do. We have to keep building that movement, building that opposition, and that's what I'm doing every day. And that's why I'm up here. I'm in Parry Sound today, and that's why I'm traveling around the province so much.
Two or three big issues you have on your plate, one of them being Bill 60, which allows private clinics to help clear some surgical backlogs. You have a number of concerns about this.
Yeah, absolutely. I think that what this bill does is it allows the government to basically sell off a big bunch of our public health care services, and private for-profit companies are going to be running those. And so what that means, essentially, is we're going to see public dollars siphoned off from patient care and go instead into shareholder pockets. It also means that we're going to see, I think, more and more of our healthcare workers allured, sucked into for-profit companies doing some of this work. And we're already in a staffing crisis. I mean, the healthcare crisis we have right now is a staffing crisis. And, you know, we have a government that on the one hand is fighting in the courts to keep nurses' wages down. And on the other hand, you know, we're losing them already. A lot of nurses, a lot of healthcare workers saying they're exhausted, they can't do this anymore. They're heading to, you know, private agencies, and they're going to, many of them may be pulled into these for-profit clinics. So that's going to mean, you know, less options in our hospitals, less support for people who are really sick. And, you know, I will say the other thing is there are public solutions, right? This doesn't have to happen. The government has a huge surplus. They're making a choice. They could be investing those billions of dollars that they've earmarked for this, and they could be investing it into public health care. They could be reopening operating rooms that are collecting dust and putting some of those dollars into emergency rooms that are closing.
Are people hearing what you're saying? On one hand, they have the government telling them this has to be done to resolve the issue. On the other hand, there's the NDP saying, well, wait a sec. And then I think about the doctor shortage and 40,000 people in the Barrie area who can't find a doctor. I've joked with mine that he can't retire until I die.
Yeah. And this is, I mean, you know, what's amazing, I've been talking to municipal leaders up here in Parry Sound from across the Northeast, and one of the things that we keep talking about is that this isn't a new problem. We knew this was coming. It was already a bit of a crisis when it came to doctors, but we knew a lot of people were going to be retiring. So we should have been predicting this, and it is really on the shoulders of previous governments, too, that we didn't plan well enough and do the jobs we needed to do to actually encourage more medical school and nurse practitioner graduates. But, I'm really worried about what this is going to mean, and I think it's going to make things worse. It's pretty clear why. And in fact, we've seen in BC and in Quebec, where they tried this, they're reversing course. You know, it hasn't worked. It's cost the system more. And one of the things that happens is that there ends up being more overbilling. So you as a patient, you may be paying for some of this on your OHIP card, but you're definitely going to be pushed to take out your credit card to pay for extra services little extras. And so in the end, it's going to cost people more as well. So I'm really concerned about it. And do you think people are worried? I'm hearing from a lot of people who say, you know, this isn't the kind of healthcare system we believe in our country and in our province. But I also know that a lot of people are feeling really desperate. But they have to understand that this is a choice they're making. They've held back, they sat on billions of dollars in healthcare spending that they didn't spend. They had it. And so they've made a choice to create this crisis so that, you know, a few companies can make a lot of money off our healthcare system.
Do you feel momentum building for your party?
You know, I really do, but it's going to take hard work. You know, there's no question, I don't take anything for granted. We are taking our responsibility here really, really seriously. I'm out working really hard, and so are all of my MPP colleagues. We have a very, very strong team. There's a lot of us. We're working all across the province, and we're focused on pushing back against their bad decisions, but also building and putting forward new solutions and building that movement that's gonna defeat them in 3 years. I'm feeling very, very hopeful. And I, like I said, I'm hearing from a lot of people who are unhappy about the Conservatives, but also see, you know, a strong alternative in the NDP.
Merritt Stiles is the leader of the Ontario New Democratic Party. What Barrie's Talking About is a weekly podcast featuring the best Barrie has to offer and more. We've covered a lot of ground since last summer, meeting Allie LaLiberty, a Midland native who has danced with the stars in Hollywood and is helping young dancers here get a leg up performing. Also met Barrie resident Mitchell Hooper, who is the strongest man in the world, and went behind the scenes in the filming of a movie in a haunted house. You can get caught up and make it easy to keep up in the future by subscribing to What Barrie's Talking About through any podcast distributor. Still to come on What Barrie's Talking About, the second coming of Canadian singer-songwriter Amanda Marshall and how a minor skateboarding injury has turned a Barrie teen's life upside down. Now this.
It's cool to care.
It's a well-known fact, blood transfusion saves lives.
It's also a well-known fact that the world relies on voluntary unpaid donations to fill the need for blood. The need for blood never ends. Canadian Blood Services in Barrie is calling on you to help save a life. Please consider donating today. Appointments are mandatory and must be booked in advance. Book today at blood.ca, through the Give Blood app, or by calling 1-888-2-DONATE.
Cool to Care is brought to you by the Peggy Hill Team. Keeping it real all the way to sold. Reach out now at peggyhill.com.
It's Cool to Care with 107.5 Cool FM.
This is What Barrie's Talking About from Barrie 360. I'm Dan Blakely. She hit the music scene in 1996, releasing three studio albums. One of them certified diamond, one went platinum, one went platinum plus. Then she faded away. But Amanda Marshall is back with a new album, is getting ready to tour again, and found some time for a Zoom conversation with Cool FM personality Amy Oust.
I was so excited when I was told I was getting a chance to speak with you. So thanks for taking some time out. And I know that you've probably been crazy busy with press lately.
A little bit, yeah. It's been a bit of an adjustment to go from sweatpants to, something slightly dressier.
Well, this is what happens when you come out of retirement after two decades.
I know, apparently. I was talking to a friend on the phone. I was like, I think I didn't think this through. This is messing with my carefully cultivated anonymity.
Well, welcome back. We're happy to have you.
Oh, thank you. Thank you.
When you were making the decision to come back, because I'm going to assume that, you know, as an artist, as a musician, you probably were still creating music, even though it wasn't public.
Yes. Yeah, absolutely.
So when you decided that you were going to come back publicly, an album, go on tour, did you have any expectations going into this of like how it's going to be years down the road?
Nope. I had zero expectations, which I think is probably the best place to operate from. I was out of the music business almost entirely for about 20 years. I did not anticipate. It wasn't an intended break. It started out, I was trying to resolve a dispute with my former manager, and I thought it was going to take about 6 months, and it wound up taking like 12 years. And it was just one of those things that kept going on and on and on. And I wouldn't capitulate, and he wouldn't capitulate. It was sort of like a really ugly divorce. And in that period of time, I was, as it kind of continued to go on and on and on, I had this record that I was working on, and I would take it out and put it away and take it out. But after a certain period of time, you just start to kind of, you lose a bit of inner momentum, and you start to think, well, I'm happy with it. Am I, you know, do I really need to do this again? Do I need to do it publicly? In 2017, a friend of mine kind of gave me a kick and said, you're too young to retire and you're too good not to try. Don't waste your gift. You know, I've heard the record. Go do it. That really was the catalyst that kind of kicked it into high gear. It's funny, though, because that guy was the same guy who held like a sort of a mini intervention back in 2002 with the manager, who would like, you know, yeah, you got to slow down with like the people you're hanging out with and like, you know. And so he was the guy who was responsible in large part for getting me out of the music business. So I was like, dude, pick. Either I'm in or I'm out.
And this friend of yours happens to be in the music industry as well.
Yeah.
This is,
yeah.
Okay. Well, I'm glad that you took his advice and you're back. So let's talk about the album, because this is the first album that you've produced yourself, correct?
Yeah, that was a huge change. Yes.
Tell me a little bit about that, how that experience was different rather than just, you know, when I say just writing for an album, but you know what I mean. I mean, producing is a whole other animal.
It's totally a different animal. In 1997, '98, my second album, Tuesday's Child, I made with Don Was. And that was a big, big deal. I had done a soundtrack song for a movie called Tin Cup. And that was how I met Don. We gelled and I knew instantly he was a hero of mine and I really wanted to work with him. So that was kind of my way in. We wound up making that record. About halfway through the record, we were in the studio one day and he turned to me. I can't remember what I had said. I was making a suggestion or offering some sort of direction to somebody. And he said, you know, you should really be producing your own records, and you will. And I was like, yeah, sure I will. It to me at the time, it seemed less of a suggestion and more of a subtle insult, like that this might happen, but not today. You know what I mean? But kind of always stuck in the back of my mind, because production for me, producing was always kind of it was like a mystery job. They were these dudes who came in and kind of like gelled everything together. And the best artists in the world, you know, obviously have some of the greatest producers in the world. So it had never occurred to me really to do it myself. But there are a lot of people who do it themselves that I love. And this kind of came about by accident. It happened very organically because I was writing and producing by myself kind of at home. I turned my closet into a vocal booth and I just sort of was doing it on my own. By the time I realized what I was doing, it was almost done. And I thought, oh, well, damn, I kind of produced a record. And so it wasn't something I had to consciously think about. I kind of looked back and I was like, damn, Don was right. I didn't really listen to him at the time, but I guess this is what he was talking about, that it's something you fall into kind of organically.
Somebody who is a fan of yours, you know, even when you were first new to music, listens to this, will they say, that is an Amanda Marshall album, but like a now Amanda Marshall album? Is there any breath to the Birmingham and Dark Horse era on this album?
100%. It's funny you should say that, because that's the best compliment I've gotten so far. Someone, actually a friend of mine, heard it and said, this sounds like you, but it sounds like now. A lot of people have asked me, obviously, what it's like to make music now as opposed to then, what it's like to come back at a different age or a different time in your life. The thing that I have wanted to make as clear as possible is this record is not chasing any kind of trend. I'm not competing with anybody. I am aiming to do exactly what I did, which was to make a record that sounds like a contemporary version of me. It sounds exactly the way I want it to sound right now. I think you have to trust the audience to mature with you. And I also think you have to trust them to know when something is authentic. I think people can tell. I think the thing that we run into a lot with music, and this isn't a knock on anybody, I love pop music as much as anybody, but I think the thing we are running into with all kinds of art now is there's a sense, I think, in amongst the populace that it's easy and anybody can do it well, yeah, and it should be free, not just music, but movies and television and dance and visual art, painting, everything is sort of, there's this sense of overriding artificiality. And I think it makes people think that it's really easy and anybody can do it and everybody should do it and everyone's great at it, so it should all be free. At the same time, I think people could sort of make the distinction when something is real. And that's what we were aiming to do. You know, it was a very small group of people who played on the record. I played on the record. It is really the most kind of authentic version of me at this particular time, which is exactly what I wanted.
You seem to be happy. And so is that album going to portray your happiness? You just look so bright and wonderful.
Thanks. Yeah, I mean, it's a fun record. It does cover some serious subject matter. The next single is a song called Dogcatcher, but the single after that is going to be a song called Rainbows and Gasoline, which covers the same terrain as Birmingham from a different perspective. The thing about Birmingham was that song came about sort of as an imagining of a woman leaving an abusive relationship in the middle of the night. Rainbows and Gasoline is that kind of the same, covers a lot of the same terrain, but it's a story about a woman who knows the signs and ends the relationship before it escalates, which to me really kind of cover that lesson learned. It's you know, it's not a deeply confessional record, but there are a lot of Easter eggs. There's a lot of me in the record. I tend to write from a sort of a removed standpoint. So even if I'm writing something that happened to me, Dark Horse was very, very personal. It was about me moving out of my parents' house and having a conflict because they didn't like my boyfriend at the time and all that stuff. But it wasn't specific to me. It wasn't written literally in a specific lyrical way. And there's a lot of that on this record.
Well, one of the things I love about you is your music is, it's like eating something hearty. It sticks to you. You know what I mean? And I totally dig that about you. So you are coming to Toronto, Massey Hall, 2 dates, June 17th, 18th. I think it's pretty clear to say people have missed you because these dates are just selling out all over the place.
Yes, I have to say that probably is the biggest shock. The level of enthusiasm for me has been, even though I had no expectations, it has been tremendously gratifying, and I cannot overstate how much how much email and text messages and letters. People still write letters. I'm getting letters and emails and all kinds of stuff that is so gratifying and really, really lovely. And I was totally unexpected.
We are so looking forward to seeing you. New album is, when is it out?
The album comes out on June the 9th.
Amazing. And of course, the single, I Hope She Cheats, and Amanda Marshall. You're amazing. Thank you so much for speaking with us.
Thank you. See you soon.
May 2021, just another day for Kevin Chow of Barrie, another day of skateboarding until he was injured in a fall. No biggie, all seemed fine until December that year when he was diagnosed with cancer, and in January 2022 was told it was terminal. He and his mother, Melissa Brown, spoke with Barrie 360's Ian McLennan about the injury, dealing with excruciating pain, and what lay ahead.
Kevin, it's an understatement to say that you have been on a journey like no other. Tell me first off, when you were diagnosed with this cancer, what was the lead up to it that finally came to this diagnosis?
I fell off my skateboard and I kept spraining my hip, and it would get better and it would heal again. I would break it again. And one day I got an extreme pain and my legs swell up. The doctors told us we had a blood clot, and then we came back the next day and we got another scan, and we found a big tumor in my right pelvis.
What type of cancer do you have, and when did you find this out?
I have osteosarcoma, and I found it out December of 2021.
In January of last year, you were told that the cancer was terminal, and I'm just wondering, anybody, no matter their age, but in particular a teenager, how did you process that?
I didn't really process it for like a year and a half. I still didn't really understand what was happening. But like now I'm finally coming to terms with what's going on.
And you're 15 now. And Kevin, I'm just wondering if I could just ask your mom, Melissa, in terms of someone who's, you know, got someone in family, your teenager who's ill like this, how do you cope?
It took a long time to come to terms with it as well. I was really upset, as anyone would be. But you just have to keep on going. Some days are worse than others, but you just have to enjoy every minute that you have.
And Kevin, you love music, and how much has music kept you focused and, you know, kept you motivated and going? How has it inspired you?
Music has inspired me a lot because, you know, even though I have this terrible disease, I can still do the things that I love, which, music is one of them.
Do you have any particular genre or any favorite artists that you enjoy, and you make your own music, I'm told?
I like rock, and one of my favorite artists are The Weeknd and Eminem.
We should talk about the pain pump that is delivering medication to control Kevin's pain. Tell me a bit about that and the costs involved to get Kevin if he still has to go to Toronto.
This intrathecal pain pump is inserted into his abdomen, and then there's a small tube catheter that goes into his spine and, you know, trickles the pain medicine into his central nervous system to control his pain. He has severe sciatic pain because the tumor is pressing on all these nerves at the bottom of the spine. And once he got this pain pump inserted, his whole life changed. He could move again. He can walk around the house with assistance, transfer it more easily, and he's a much happier boy because he's not in excruciating pain anymore. But every 6 weeks we have to go down to Toronto Western to top up the medicine in the pump. First time was paid for by SickKids. Second time was covered by Toronto Western, but now they're not going to cover it anymore, and OHIP doesn't cover it. What we really are trying to get at this point is somebody in Simcoe County to be trained on how to deliver medication through this pump, which seems very simple. It's just through a needle. It's nothing crazy. There's no machines or anything involved. And then that way we wouldn't have to get into a transport and go all the way down to Toronto.
And what is the cost, Melissa, for that ambulance ride? I take it's an ambulance? Yeah.
Yeah, it's roughly about $1,000 every 6 weeks is really hard, especially on people that don't work.
Have the hospitals or assisted you down in Toronto maybe to find somebody or some organization or medical?
Yeah, the social worker is helpful, but even she's running into problems trying to find people to fund transport. There's lots of funding for other things, such as, you know, wheelchairs or different things people need, but transport seems to be something hard to try to find funding for, especially like at that cost, like $1,000 every 6 weeks.
And what about filling up the pain pump? Have the hospitals down there reached out or looked around to see if there's anybody in this area that has that, you know, that skill set?
No, they haven't, but I think now they're starting to, because
they see how severe this problem is, like trying to arrange transport and stuff. I don't think they thought at first that he was going to need to get this pain pump filled as regularly as he needs to. I think at first they thought it was going to be every 3 months, but now it's every 6 weeks. So now they're kind of scrambling, trying to figure out what the heck they're going to do to keep this pump filled up.
I guess really, a young man like you at 15, a young boy still, what advice would you give to people?
My best advice would be to live your life while you can, because anything could happen at the spur of the moment. Like, you could have a heart attack, or you could be in a car crash. So just do the things you enjoy and don't let anything stop you.
Kevin's classmates at Innisdale Secondary School have rallied behind him, holding fundraisers on his behalf, a hockey tournament in his honor, and a couple of teachers put together a group of carolers who showed up to sing Christmas carols at his front door. And that's our program for this week. Thanks to Ian, MJ, and Amy for their input, to Matt Ladder for his technical expertise, and to you for listening. If you like what you've heard, please subscribe to What Barry's Talking About, rate it, review it. You can also keep up with What Barry's Talking About on Facebook and Twitter at Barry360 and on our website, Barry360.com. I'm Dan Blakely. Hope you'll join us again next week.